Welcome to Fronteras, a program that explores issues at the border and beyond through the lens of arts, culture, and history. I'm Norma Martinez with Texas Public Radio in San Antonio. Poet Carmen Tafoya is a former poet laureate for the city of San Antonio and the state of Texas. She's an activist and an author, including penning many books for young children. The Spanish translation of her 2023 book, Warrior Girl, published as Guerrera, recently won a Campoy Ada Award for bilingual and Spanish language literature for young people. The award is named after two authors and scholars, Alma Flor Ada and F. Isabel Campoy, considered icons in the field of Spanish language children's literature. Carmen Tafoya joins us today, as does Patricia Sanchez, professor and chair of UTSA's Department of Bilingual Bicultural Studies. UTSA hosted the Campoy Ada Awards ceremony on April 3rd. Tafoya says she has seen a tremendous change in the publishing world when it comes to releasing works for young people in Spanish.
I remember in the mid-1970s, I was a doctoral student, and two distinguished scholars were brought in to lecture to one of the classes as guest lecturers, and one of them was Alma Florada. And one of the things she was just beginning to talk about and to try to motivate others to take action on was the fact that there was such a lack of literature for children en español, in Spanish. For years, I still had the T-shirt that many of the bilingual doctoral students had purchased that said, literatura infantil en español, you know. There was a hunger and there was a desperate need, and children who came to this country already literate in Spanish simply could not find books here in their libraries, in their schools, or in the public libraries even often, that allowed them to read. So they were coming at a level of literacy and then not being able to read because they didn't speak English and they didn't know how to pronounce English. And instead of having a smooth transition and being able to add another language easily and continue their literacy skills, it was a huge roadblock. So publishers just in those days weren't really interested. They didn't think anything would sell. They weren't really aware of the fact that people would want to read in Spanish. And often if you even had a word in Spanish in the book, or sometimes even if the author's last name was in Spanish, they were very negative about, you know, the popularity. This is not going to sell. It's not going to be marketable. And we've seen a huge change in that attitude, partly due to the existence of children's book awards, because the children's book awards themselves began to expand and say, we need things that reflect a Latino experience, or we need things that reflect a Mexican-American experience. And so as awards were brought in, we had more books being published that reflected Latino environments and social structures and history. But then not all of those were published bilingually, and very few of them were published only in Spanish. So the existence of an award both answers the hunger and the need of the public, and it encourages publishers to see that there is a market there. And so the existence of the Campoy Ada Award is an incredible help to the intellectual and linguistic capacities of this nation.
And Patricia, have you perhaps directly heard from the authors of these books who have either submitted or won these awards? Maybe they have heard from readers, young readers, or maybe even their parents, letting perhaps you know what importance it had on the development of maybe their child's self-confidence.
Yeah, I think that they're just excited that something that they're leaving as a legacy will have, you know, because once a book wins, it gets the little sticker on it, and it's on its cover, and it's there after every other printing. And so I think that that just speaks to, like, the really strong reputation of these amazing poets and writers who are bringing this award together. But I think also something that we try to foment, too, alongside this award, not that we have it back in person after the pandemic, is working with a local public school. We invite a local public school either the day before the ceremony, the day of, or the day after. If we're going to have an author who's coming to receive their award, we want to leverage that and also have them speak to a group of children. So last year we had about 180 kids come to our campus, and we had David Bowles speaking, we had Carmen Tafoya speaking about the books that they had won a prize for. And the children had gotten the book in their classrooms probably 3 to 4 weeks prior. In the life of a kid, a book is like a famous movie to them or a famous movie star. So they were just like, oh my God, we're meeting these people in person and they're talking to me and they're real people. And so they really got into it. The book that Carmen Tafoya was sharing with her collaborator was about butterflies. So we brought butterfly kites to the campus, and they made butterfly artwork with little coffee filters. And then because David Bowles' book was about twin cities across the Mexico border, the kids took a little field trip to the Mercado across the street from UTSA to talk about mercados that were in the story that are now here in real life. So it's just amazing, I think, for me as an educator to see more children on the UTSA campus and being celebrated for their identities that involve both their language and their culture. You know, if I can digress just for a second, I feel that so many of our Texas communities, like if you think of families in West Texas or San Angelo who've been there for 4 to 5 generations, they are maintaining their language, I want to say at great cost, but how are they doing it in a very natural way? They might be listening to Tejano music. They might use some key catchphrases. They might be speaking to grandparents in Spanish. So how can we in the field of publishing or education complement that? Why not continue to have more resources that kids could use in school, in their local libraries, having it gifted to them? As a kid, I didn't have these bilingual books growing up. You know, my library was the local Kmart in Benson, Arizona. Well, it wasn't in Benson, it was in Tucson. We had to drive there. And my family did not grow up taking me to the library. My parents are immigrants from Mexico. But I know that in my family, there was a lot of oral storytelling. So every night, my mom would make up stories about a rabbit and el campo. And I loved rabbits when I was a kid. So she always had all these different stories about rabbits. So there's like a lot of love held in many bilingual Spanish-speaking communities where there's oral storytelling going on, whether they're made-up cuentos or they're family lore. And I think even more so now, if we're trying to combat this erasure that happens to our communities, like preserving our home languages is so important. So I think that families who have a lot of birthday parties, if you can give a child a book that's in their language, or, you know, the book could be in two languages, because that's probably the big thing here. If you have a book that the print is in two languages, you can have grandma reading to your little nietecito. You can have your tía reading to your cousin, whoever has that language in whichever way, so they can share the experience of a story in any language that they speak. So I think that that'd be my big message, is that to try to give these books out as more gifts and enjoying these moments, because there is this magic about being around a family member who shares a story or shares some creativity with you. And I think we need to bring in more materials to our Tejano communities who are trying to maintain their Spanish.
Patricia Sanchez is a professor and chair of the Department of Bilingual Bicultural Studies at the University of Texas at San Antonio. We're also speaking with poet and educator Carmen Tafoya, professor emerita with UTSA and a former poet laureate for the city of San Antonio and the state of Texas. Tafoya is the author of the award-winning book for young people, Warrior Girl, and its Spanish translation, Guerrera. When we come back, the main character of Guerrera is an immigrant girl who's trying hard to be accepted in an increasingly hostile society. Her grandmother tells her to find time to celebrate the good things.
Because when you're celebrating, when you find a reason to be happy, a reason to sing or dance or paint or play or laugh or write, they haven't taken everything away from you.
Our conversation continues next on Fronteras.
Support for TPR comes from Texas Mutual Insurance Company, a workers' comp carrier dedicated to handling claims proactively and a commitment to helping injured employees and workers' comp policyholders get back to business. TexasMutual.com/claims.
Welcome back to Fronteras. I'm Norma Martinez with Texas Public Radio in San Antonio. Poet and educator Carmen Tafoya has written numerous books of poetry and works for young readers. Tafoya has won numerous international Latino Book Awards, Tomas Rivera Book Awards, and the prestigious Americas Award. Her most recent children's book, Warrior Girl, was a recipient of some of those awards. Its Spanish translation, Guerrera, was recently recognized by the Premio Campoy Ada for Latino-centric young adult poetry. The awards ceremony on April 3rd honored Tafoya and the book's translator, Rita Urquijo Ruiz. It's a book set in verse about a 12-year-old immigrant girl in San Antonio whose name has been altered from Tere to Terry. Her father has been deported, and she's seeing a lot of negative narratives about immigrants on TV. Tafoya joins us on the program to talk about her book and Spanish language children's literature, as does Patricia Sanchez of the University of Texas at San Antonio. Tafoya says her main character in Guerrera leans on her grandmother to reclaim her name and her culture.
There's some real difficulties, but she learns heavily from her grandmother, who has strong indigenous San Antonio roots, about how internal strength is what gets you through, and how there are many ways to approach finding your strength, celebration being one of them. And in fact, one of the primary messages comes out of one of the poems that says, you know, she's explaining how a grandmother is always celebrating everything, el día de San Fulano de Tal, and el día del chef, and el día de la risa, the day to make jokes, and the day to cook exotic fun things. And, you know, she's exploring all of these excuses for celebration. And I think we are a city and a culture that seeks to celebrate everything we can. And she explains it by saying, because when you're celebrating, when you find a reason to be happy, a reason to sing or dance or paint or play or laugh or write, they haven't taken everything away from you. And that becomes her guide, her goal, to find that your internal strength can get you through and can allow you to enjoy life and to celebrate the things that are good and to work to change the things that are not. Empowering.
Well, the cover of the book itself is also very celebratory. She is with her arms spread open and her eyes are closed in joy. It looks like she's caught in mid-leap. Did you somehow confer with the artist on what you wanted for that cover?
I think that we had an excellent artist who read the book and she got the message. And she worked closely with my editor. Large publishing companies often don't like the artist and the author speaking to each other. I think they're always scared we're going to have some kind of conflict or war or whatever. So they don't want that to happen. So it all goes through the editor. But I was delighted with the way she captured the spirit of the book in that illustration. I want young children to know that they have the power. They have certain powers over their life. They can choose how they want to see themselves. They can choose what they want to be happy about and what they want to commit themselves to working, to gaining or changing in the world.
Well, it seems like a lot of those powers are more purposefully being stripped away.
Yes.
Today, there are the stories that are talked about in this book. There are other stories that we have come to learn with time that are now being erased over supposed DEI initiatives. And so I'm curious, Patricia, you're working, you know, academically in a very volatile time when it comes to public education. UTSA is a publicly funded state school. What pressure have you been feeling, if you can talk about that, in the work that you do?
Yeah, there's definitely a lot of pressure. The unit I'm in, Bicultural Bilingual Studies, has been there since the university opened in 1969. It was a division specifically created as part of UTSA to serve South Texas. And South Texas, we are bilingual communities, right? In San Antonio alone, I think over 35% to 40% of families in their households speak a language other than English. So I see that even though we're having, I think, a lot of political restrictions, we haven't had literally a restriction in our curriculum yet. And I say yet because there's a bill out there in the state legislature that we might have to change our curriculum. You know, our unit is trying to be a bridge to a lot of communities. So we do teach ESL. We prepare teachers to become ESL teachers. Our bilingual teachers are also being a bridge to children who speak Spanish to not only become outstanding Spanish speakers, but outstanding English speakers. So there's a place for us even after, I guess, all this is said and done. But I do feel like there's pressure that it creates a lot of uncertainty among my faculty and students about what they have believed to be working for so long to really, you know, honor these different communities that have different multilingual ties, multicultural ties, that now they struggle with it in that if there are to be more restrictions, how could they really get their message across? That's based on research, right? That's all the work we do in our curriculum, our theories, all based on research, you know, decades of research. So, yeah, I think we have to kind of still put on a really brave face and continue with the work we're doing because, you know, I was just seeing a report that came out, I think in October of 24, from a professor, David Fernandez in Spain, talking about in the whole world, we've just passed 600 million people in the world are Spanish speakers. And guess what? The U.S. has a second spot. Mexico has a first spot with 132 million Spanish speakers. The U.S. just passed Colombia, which is, you know, a nation of its own that speaks Spanish. So Colombia has 53 million Spanish speakers, but the U.S. has 57 million Spanish speakers. So, you know, I almost feel like you try to eradicate sometimes language and culture, but the numbers are there. They're opposite of that. It's growing. And so that's just amazing that the U.S. is not a Spanish-speaking country, right? And now that we do have English as our official language, the numbers are just going to continue to grow. That was surprising to me and somehow heartwarming to me, right? Because in the midst of all this struggle, communities are keeping their Spanish language. And again, kind of like I was saying that, well, how do these like sixth generation Tejanos or fifth generation keep their language? But there's a lot involved in the communities with music and their cultures. And so if we're trying to also complement that with the books we have, then you can't really completely erase these entire communities.
It's so important to recognize that language is an asset, not a threat. Languages have always served as an asset to this nation and to any nation. It's like saying we want to wipe out part of civilization, we want to wipe out part of knowledge to fight a language. If it had not been for the Navajo language, we probably wouldn't have won World War II. If it had not been for the Spanish language, we would not have had the close ties that UTSA was founded with the idea of strengthening between North America and South America. We have a tremendous asset in language, and people who have a language deep within their heart that it represents stories and songs and concepts and values recognize that they really want it. They don't want to lose it. It's kind of asking somebody if they want to lose one of their limbs or part of their brain. You know, we even have situations medically where a person has a stroke and wakes up speaking Polish and everybody thinks they're speaking gibberish and they can't understand them and they don't know why this person is only speaking gibberish. And then some janitor going down the hallway says, he's speaking perfect Polish. You know, and then you find the person spoke Polish before they started school. And the family didn't know that this was a native Polish speaker who'd been acculturated and had a subtractive kind of bilingualism happen. And in dual language education, bilingual education, we talk a lot about additive bilingualism. You want to add 1 + 1 and get 2. You want to add 2 + 1 and get 3. Not a subtractive bilingualism where a person enters with one language, learns another language, and somehow comes back to one again. We don't know how that happens unless it's a matter of giving the message that a language other than English is not an asset. And we don't want to give that message. It's a treasure. It's a strength. It's a value. And I am very, very grateful to the publishers that they immediately, reading this book, said, we are going to publish this in Spanish. Well, by then I was at work on another book, and I said, you know, I've translated picture books, but I'd really rather have somebody else do the translation. And Dr. Rita Urquijo Ruiz did a beautiful translation. San Antonio's is full of treasures like this. She had, I think, her first 18 years growing up in Mexico, very well educated in Spanish, and then moved to the United States and now teaches college at Trinity University. So she has a beautiful fluency in both languages. And I said, we need somebody who understands the English of Texas and the Spanish of Texas and who can authentically recreate this book in a Spanish that is appropriate to this region. So we're not having somebody write a book about an American kid in Cincinnati who goes up talking like they're from London, England. You know, you know? We've got to have it be linguistically appropriate. And she did that. I am greatly in her debt for her having done such a beautiful job on the translation of Warrior Girl to Guerrera.
You know, it's funny, side note about translations. I remember talking to Reina Grande and having her books translated, and she mentioned that it didn't feel sort of authentically her to see the translation. And she said that the next time around, she wants to take a stab at her own translation so that it sounds more like her in all its imperfections.
That's true. I always say I prefer the story to be retold in a different language rather than translating. So, for instance, in my book Rebosos, I had 17 poems that were ekphrastic poems about the women in the paintings. But some of them I'd written originally in Spanish and some I'd written in English, and translating them was really hard. Translations are a function of the original. I wanted something with the power of the original. So I had to kind of wipe my mind clean and write the same poem, but telling the story anew in that language. So the lines don't match up exactly and the words don't match up exactly. It is not a precise translation. It is an emotional translation. I just want to commend all of the people that have worked over the years to preserve the beauty of the Spanish language in this country. And that includes families. That includes grandparents that might teach their grandchild to declamar un poema that they had learned or been taught to declamar en español. And there are people across San Antonio that you will find that you say, did your grandma ever teach you to, oh, yes, and they'll stand up and they'll recite this thing that's 30 verses long. And they say, my Spanish isn't really good anymore, but I remember that one really well, you know. So all of the people that have worked towards preserving a language, because every language is a tool to survival. It is part of what culture is, which is a survival kit for the next generation. It's how do you live your life? How do you psychologically make peace with difficult things that happen? How do you relate to other human beings? Every language and every book is a piece of that survival kit that we hand the next generation. And this next generation is going to need a lot of tools to survive the tough physical and climactic situations that are happening. So we need all the help we can get. So thank you to all of the people that have valued and helped languages survive and helped books of all different kinds be available to young people, because they serve as guides as how to live your life, or some as how not to live your life. We learn something from them.
Poet Carmen Tafoya is the author of numerous books for young people, including Warrior Girl. Its Spanish language translation, Guerrera, recently received the Premio Campoy Ada for Latino-centric young adult poetry. The book's translator is Rita Urquijo Ruiz. They were recognized at an awards ceremony April 3rd at the University of Texas at San Antonio. You can see video from that ceremony at tpr.org. We were also joined today by Patricia Sanchez, professor and chair of the Department of Bilingual Bicultural Studies at UTSA. Thanks for joining us today for Fronteras. Fronteras is produced by Norma Martinez and Marian Navarro. Our executive producer is Dan Katz. Our editor is Fernando Ortiz Jr. Charanga Cakewa composed our theme music. Hear past episodes at tpr.org and on the Fronteras podcast. I'm Norma Martinez with Texas Public Radio in San Antonio.